Christmas Eve, 1968. While families gathered around television sets across the globe, three astronauts floated 240,000 miles away in a tin can smaller than a station wagon. Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders were about to do something no human had ever done: read from the Book of Genesis while orbiting the moon. But this wasn't just a religious gesture. It was the culmination of the most audacious gamble in human history, a mission thrown together in four frantic months to beat the Soviets and salvage a year that had seen America torn apart by assassinations, riots, and war. When their spacecraft disappeared behind the moon's dark side, breaking all contact with Earth, no one knew if they'd ever hear from them again. What they achieved didn't just win the space race, it gave humanity a new way of seeing itself. By summer 1968, NASA faced a crisis. The lunar module was plagued by problems threatening Kennedy's end-of-decade deadline, while intelligence suggested the Soviets were preparing their own lunar mission. George Lowe, a quiet NASA manager, conceived a radical solution: skip the lunar module and send Apollo 8 straight to the moon. The idea was insane. The Saturn V had only carried humans twice. The second test failed catastrophically. The spacecraft would travel 250,000 miles, perform precise orbital maneuvers with zero error margin, and return through Earth's atmosphere at temperatures half as hot as the sun's surface, all with just 4 months to prepare. When Deke Slayton pitched the mission to Frank Borman, the commander's response was immediate: I'll go. For Borman, this wasn't exploration. It was about beating the communists. Since Sputnik shocked America in 1957, the Soviets had dominated space. The moon represented America's chance to prove technological superiority. Borman, a West Point graduate and fighter pilot, approached Apollo 8 like a military operation: no nonsense, precise, mission-focused. Jim Lovell brought different energy. He'd devoured books about rockets since childhood, dreaming of leaving Earth. By Apollo 8, he'd spent more time in space than anyone. Where Borman saw duty, Lovell saw adventure. Bill Anders, at 35, was the youngest, a nuclear engineer who understood they'd be like Christopher Columbus, the first to reach a new world. Behind these men stood three remarkable women. Susan Borman maintained outward calm while privately convinced Frank wouldn't return. Marilyn Lovell balanced four children with supporting Jim's dangerous career. Valerie Anders managed five young kids after hearing her husband's frank assessment: one-third chance of success, one-third of failure with survival, one-third they wouldn't come back at all. December 21, 1968, 7:51 a.m. The Saturn V ignited with 7.6 million pounds of thrust, enough to power all of Britain. After surviving Max Q and shedding the first stage, they reached orbit 11 minutes later. Mission Control's historic message: Apollo 8, you are go for TLI. The third stage engine reignited, accelerating them to 24,208 miles per hour. They were leaving home. Turning to face Earth, all three fell silent. Our planet appeared as a vibrant blue and white sphere against infinite blackness. Then disaster struck. Borman became violently ill, vomiting in zero gravity, waste globules floating throughout the cabin. Anders and Lovell frantically captured the revolting spheres, while Borman, terrified of an abort, initially refused to inform Mission Control. Eventually, they sent a private medical message, and doctors prescribed medication that resolved the crisis. As they crossed into the moon's gravitational sphere, they made history: the first humans captured by another celestial body's gravity. Approaching the moon, Anders spotted it as a giant black hole where stars vanished. Then they slipped behind it, breaking radio contact. For 33 agonizing minutes, no one on Earth knew if they'd entered orbit or crashed. The crew fired the service propulsion system for exactly 4 minutes and 2 seconds. Too long meant permanent lunar orbit. Failure meant looping back with mission failed. The engine performed flawlessly. Emerging into sunlight, they became the first humans to see the moon's far side. What they saw stunned them: a desolate, colorless, dead world. Looks like plaster of Paris, Lovell reported. Borman called it a vast, lonely expanse of nothing. The contrast between vibrant Earth and this lifeless world affected them profoundly. We came all this way to explore the moon, Anders later reflected, and the most important thing is that we discovered the Earth. After several orbits, they prepared for their Christmas Eve broadcast, the largest audience in history. At 8:30 p.m. Houston time on Christmas Eve, television networks worldwide interrupted programming. "This is Apollo 8, coming to you live from the moon," Borman announced. Then Anders made a stunning announcement. "The crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you." The astronauts read from Genesis. "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth," Anders began. Lovell continued. Borman concluded, "And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good earth." Walter Cronkite fought back emotion on air. Across the world, people stepped outside to gaze at the moon, searching for three men who had just spoken to them from another world. Hours later came another critical moment, firing the engine to break free from lunar orbit. If it failed, they'd be trapped forever. The maneuver would happen behind the moon, out of contact. As Apollo 8 disappeared at 11:42 p.m., tension gripped mission control. Four agonizing minutes passed. Finally, Lovell broke through. "Houston, Apollo 8, over." Then he delivered the perfect Christmas message. "Please be informed, there is a Santa Claus. They were coming home." Among the mission's most profound legacies was a single photograph. During lunar orbit, Anders captured Earth rising above the moon's horizon, a vibrant blue marble suspended in blackness. This Earthrise image appeared on newspaper front pages worldwide and became a catalyst for the environmental movement, adopted as the symbol for the first Earth Day in April 1970. It fundamentally changed how humans viewed their planet, not as an infinite resource, but as a precious, limited sanctuary requiring protection. Anders found himself transformed. "When I looked up and saw the Earth coming up on this very stark, beat-up lunar horizon, an Earth that was the only color in the whole universe, it was the most beautiful thing there was to see." The image revealed our planet's fragility, a small blue marble with no visible borders, reminding us that we all share one precious home in the cosmos. The spacecraft hit a narrow entry corridor at 25,000 miles per hour. Too steep meant incineration. Too shallow meant bouncing into space with dwindling life support. As they plunged into Earth's atmosphere, the world outside blazed brilliantly. "I've never seen it this bright before," Borman exclaimed, as G-forces reached 7 times normal gravity. Anders watched baseball-sized chunks of heat shield fly off, while outside temperatures reached half the sun's surface. After 5 minutes of blackout, 3 parachutes blossomed. Apollo 8 splashed down violently, flipping upside down before inflatable balloons righted it. Helicopters ferried them to the USS Yorktown, where hundreds of sailors cheered. The mission dominated global conversation. The New York Times called it the most fantastic voyage of all times. Time magazine made an unprecedented decision to change its Man of the Year cover from The Dissenter to honor the 3 astronauts. One telegram captured the moment. "Thanks, you saved 1968. When Apollo 11 landed 7 months later, Kennedy's deadline had been met. America had won the moon race. But more importantly, humanity gained a new perspective. Apollo 8 revealed Earth as a sanctuary of life in vast, cold darkness. That perspective remains Apollo 8's greatest gift, a vision reminding us of our shared destiny on this fragile blue marble suspended in infinite cosmos.